Today's interview is with Marcus Pierce. Marcus and I met, I guess, when Bronnie Ware invited us to speak at an event that she was thinking of putting together with myself, Marcus, Bronnie, and another good friend of ours, Shara Carruthers. I'd never met Marcus in person, but the minute I did, I felt instantly like we'd known each other for a million lifetimes before. He's just a really decent human being. And in the conversation, we talk a bit about congruence, and definitely this is a guy of high integrity and is very congruent. He's also so much fun. I'm really glad that we are doing this event.
And you should probably know, for a limited time only, there is a 2-for-1 offer available on the website onedayinbyronbay.com. So if you want to come along with a friend, I would love to see you there. There's also a really cool VIP upgrade available. So head to onedayinbyronbay.com. And now, meet my mate, Marcus Pierce.
Welcome to Carlosophy's Stories Behind Success. I'm Carly Nimmo. It's so easy to fall into comparisonitis as an entrepreneur, and it can be paralyzing. In my own journey, I've come to understand that regardless of your level of success, fame, or fortune, we're all suffering from the same stories of fear, struggle, and failure. So let's talk about it.
Not a story of instant and raging success. It's not a story of, oh, I was the cool kid at school, and it's definitely not the story that I'm Insta-famous. More than anything, I was a mediocre child that had big dreams. I always knew what I wanted to do with my life. I was a sports mad nut that couldn't play Aussie rules to save myself, but I loved all things Aussie rules and sport. And so I always thought I'd be the next Eddie McGuire or Bruce McAvaney. They were my childhood heroes. So I grew up thinking that would be my life. I studied journalism at RMIT, got into radio, in breakfast radio, did that through my uni days, and then moved into drive time radio on all things sport. I started a show called The Run Home at a Melbourne 24/7 sports radio station called SEN. And I'm not thinking there'll be many sports lovers on Carlosophies, but that was really my life. I was a heavy drinker, like a heavy binge drinker, you know, the early to mid-20s, typical Aussie male, binge drinking, cigarette smoking, hedonistic type lifestyle, you know, work hard, play hard. That, as I know that you experienced in your days, Carly, we had somewhat parallel lives in our 20s,
yeah,
I think.
Totally.
Just, you know, worked with a lot of egos. There was a lot of work hard, play hard. I loved my 15-hour days because I was just surrounded by sport and deadlines. And I worked at the footy show for a while at Channel 9. That's the AFL footy show. But it was just before I moved to Channel 9 that I fell in love with my now wife, Sarah, who's a health professional, somewhat semi-retired because we're in the thick of raising children. But Sarah's a health professional that abhorred smoking, was not really big into drinking, ate organic food, and had a really, I suppose, empowering view of the body and health and wellness. And to be quite frank, I had absolutely no idea about any of that stuff. I smoked 3 cigarettes a day and thought that was okay because it was only 3.
That's pretty good.
It was pretty good, wasn't it? Until I did the stats on it, until I realized that 3 cigarettes a day was 1,000 cigarettes a year, and not including my packet every Saturday night with friends, and maybe another packet on Friday night, and maybe a packet on Thursday night, whatever it was. But 3 cigarettes a day was 1,000 cigarettes a year. That was 10,000 cigarettes a decade, and I was madly falling in love with Sarah. And if I was going to marry her and have children, it probably wasn't the best example to be telling my kids, well, kids, it's only 3 cigarettes a day. It's not my style. I had to really turn it into a statistic that was disgusting. And Sarah was really good at kind of just, she wasn't pushing me. She was just helping me realize that there was probably more to my life than just my work. I'd always been into personal growth. My mum gave me the Tony Robbins Get the Edge program for my 21st birthday,
wow.
Which would have been a big deal for my mum because my mum and dad split up when I was 10. I still remember in the days of audio cassettes, the switch flicked from 3AW, which was Melbourne and still is Melbourne's most listened to talk about radio station. My mum flicked the switch from 3AW to Tony Robbins 30-day audio cassette program, probably called Personal Power, something like that, because she pretty much had to turn her life around because her life had been turned upside down by splitting up with my dad. And so I'd always been exposed to that stuff from a young age, and I really loved it. But she gave me this program for my 21st birthday, but I conveniently skipped past the health section. I was all into career. I was really into emotional health. I have two sisters, so I grew up in a house full of girls from the age of about 10. So I get on famously with women, when it get on way better with girls and guys. But I'd always skip past the health section when it came to anything to do with personal growth. And so Sarah was that speed bump. She really made me confront it in a real working relationship. To cut this somewhat long story short, Sarah and I ended up going vegan. I ended up going from some heavy binge drinking, meat eating, cigarette smoking, hard working, and party like mid-20s typical bloke. My nickname in the footy show office went from MP to mung bean like overnight. and I was loving it though. I was absolutely loving it. And so ever since those days, I've really probably looked at my life a bit more holistically. And then just to cap the story, well, kind of to finish the story, because literally I could talk about this for 50 minutes, we eventually got married, still married to this day. We now have three kids. Sarah wants more, by the way. She's just in the thick of it, loving it. But Jesus. We – I know, crazy woman. But we – in 2010, in the height of my hardcore veganism – I was reading a book called Healthy at 100, which is by a man called John Robbins, who was the heir to the throne of the Baskin-Robbins Ice Cream Corporation, which is the biggest ice cream corporation in the world. So John Robbins, the only son, was the heir to a multi-billion dollar company, and he decided that he'd had enough of having breakfast, lunch, and dinner for ice cream, you know, having ice cream for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. He swam in an ice cream-shaped swimming pool like seriously, his mates came over to swim in an ice cream-shaped pool, and he realized that the 30-second flavor of ice cream was not his life purpose. He realized there was something bigger than that he wanted to achieve in his life. His uncle, Bert Baskin, had already died of heart disease. His dad, Irv Robbins, had suffered a heart attack, and he did not want to go down that path. And so he consciously ostracized himself from the family. He fled America for the safety of Canada with his girlfriend, his now wife, and they got a little shack in the backyard of Canada somewhere, sprinkling cabbage seeds and kale seeds, running meditation classes for like $2 a class, and really just creating an entirely different life. And in this book called Healthy at 100, he referred to a study done by the Yale School of Public Health. And it was a study done over the course of 20 or 30 years, interviewing people, about 600 people, asking them as they get older, do you agree with the statements, as you age, you become less useful, as you age, you become more of a burden, your best years are behind you, you know, once you turn 40 or 50 or 60, you're over the hill. And essentially what this Yale study found was that the people that believed with these statements, as you age, you become less useful, as you age, you know, your best years are behind you, the people that had these disempowering beliefs on aging died 7.5 years earlier than the people that had an empowered view of aging. Now, for me, this was mind-blowing, because at this point in my life, I was the height of veganism. I was reading the book really just to strengthen my belief that being a vegan was the fountain of youth. Being vegan was the height of enlightenment. I was better than everyone else because I didn't eat meat and everyone else had no idea. And I pretty much thought that because John Robbins, who was a vegan, and I think he still is, and he was writing books about this stuff, I thought this book would tell me exactly the same thing. But essentially, that book taught me that everything that I was believing at the time was dead wrong, that being vegan wasn't the height of enlightenment, that there were so many other factors, and just a belief was enough to make an impact on someone's lifespan of 7.5 years. This study looked at their beliefs, and what this study found was it was their beliefs that impacted their lifespan. It wasn't their exercise levels, their relationship status, their economic status, their upbringing, their genes, the air they breathe. It was purely a belief. And, you know, in this day and age, everyone's so intent on drinking a green smoothie or doing CrossFit or yoga or mindfulness or whatever it is. But if you've got a disastrous or disempowering belief around your future, around getting older, that's going to have an impact, literally an impact in cutting almost 10 years of good living from your life. And so that changed the course of my life. And still to this day, I'm banging on to people about not just mastering one area of their life, but mastering multiple areas of their life. And so that's when my Exceptional Life Blueprint was birthed. That's when the 100 Not Out podcast was birthed. But really, that's when a whole different philosophy of my life was birthed. And I've been banging on about it ever since.
Love it. I love that, like, we really have lived kind of parallel lives, haven't we? It's like freakishly weird.
I think so.
And so I've got a question for you, like, taking you back to like those SEN days and the footy days. And like, how does a guy who gets along really well with women and kind of understands them? Because that's something that I know about you. Like, you do, you know, you're just like, you're not just like one of the girls.
But I am one of the girls. It's all right. It's okay. Don't worry. I get that all the time. I am one of the girls.
But how do you fit in when you're in that, when you were in that kind of, was it like, were you wearing a mask or do you just like, I don't know, like, how do you fit into
how I fit in is because, you know, in the footy show office, I still remember there were two girls, Kylie and Fee. I would go into their office and we'd have D&Ms about all things in life. You know, like, we would talk about anything but footy. We'd be talking about all other things. With blokes, I can talk about footy all day long. So I feel somewhat chameleon, however people like to say it these days. I can blend in with blokes, but it's just that blokes generally don't like to talk about the deep and meaningful stuff. I mean, some of them do, and they're the ones that, you know, I suppose are attracted to my message. But if I bump into a bloke in the street or the cafe, naturally we're going to end up talking about sport. But if I end up having a conversation with a girl, we're going to talk about the deep and meaningfuls in life. And I love that.
Yeah, that is so cool. And yeah. So, like, after SEN, did you, like, once your healthy lifestyle or healthy living kind of thing, like, what made you make the leap from that to...
Oh, well, yeah, I did leave that part out of the story. So Sarah and I, we travelled overseas together.
Yeah.
I was always going to travel, but I thought I'd do some TV before I travelled because it was good on the CV for working overseas and the rest. So did the Channel 9 time for about 18 months. We travelled, and then it was only in... We lived in a little thatched cottage in Ireland, in Northwest Ireland called Donegal Town. And Sarah and I, Sarah's a chiropractor, and so she didn't need, all of her studies in Australia were accepted in Ireland. They weren't accepted in England. You got to do all the exams again pretty much. But in Ireland, they recognise your Australian qualifications. And so we went to Ireland, and it worked out better financially for, you know, essentially two backpackers, for Sarah to work than me to work. If we were going to choose where to live, Sarah's pay packet was going to be better than my pay packet, essentially. And so we followed Sarah's work. And it was in that process that I really got to see Sarah at work. I'd never seen her in practice when we lived in Melbourne. She worked in South Gippsland. I got to see her at work, and I kind of got bitten by the chiropractic bug or the health bug, just seeing the responses that people were having to in their health and in their life. I was like, oh, this is almost like, it's almost more fulfilling doing all of this life stuff than football stuff. Like, football had become a job, whereas I'm a much better fan. I love football more as a fan than working in it. So I'd kind of really got bitten by that bug. But it was more that, you know, health for many people gives them an opportunity. People don't go to a chiro or a doctor or a naturopath because they love chiro or medicine or naturopathy. They go there because they want to spend more time with their kids. They're not working as well as they want to, and they want more energy for their work. It's never about the health. It's what the health gives them. And so, you know, I don't care whether people love or hate chiro or naturopathy or medicine or, you know, meditation, mindfulness. For me, it's veganism. Not the vehicle. Veganism. You know, I don't care what people eat, what they do, what they believe. It's what it gives them in their life. Mm. And that's what I love. That's what I saw in seeing Sarah work that I didn't see in my sporting media days. Like, I loved entertaining people, but now for me, like, events that I put on, it's exactly the same as TV. You're just covering a different topic. Like, putting on an event is just like running a live TV show just without the video cameras, if you know what I mean. Yeah. It's exactly the same, but you're talking about a different topic. Podcasting is just like radio. You're just talking about a different topic than football, and I just find it more fulfilling, and I can leave the sports stuff to a hobby more than anything.
When did you start your first podcast? Was that like straight once you got back, or?
No, so the podcast didn't start, I think, it was 2013. We're up to like episode 250 odd of 100 Not Out. So I think it was 20, 2013. After I read that book, Healthy 100, in 2010, late 2010, maybe early 2011, I knew that my life was going to shift. But like many people, I didn't quite know how. So all of my IP, for want of a better term, was bubbling away in my mind for 2 years. As we were having more children, I was consciously helping Sarah work less in practice, which meant that I was still heavily invested in our business, which meant that I was less invested in turning my message into a business. I didn't monetize my message, so to speak, until 2013. But it was bubbling away in the background. Like many people, it was taking shape. But my priority was to keep our family sane, if you know what I mean, keep Sarah adjusting but not having to spend copious amounts of time at work. And then it wasn't really until 2013. We'd had two children by then. We kind of got our mojo on the parenting front. The business front had its mojo. But I also think by 2013, we definitely knew we were going to relocate. We were living in Victoria at the time. We knew we were going to relocate. We'd made a commitment one New Year's Eve that we were going to do one more winter in South Gippsland. It was essentially a way to commit ourselves to selling our practice and moving up to the region. And that's when I really started to get some legs on turning my message into a business.
What was it about Byron that attracted you?
So we moved to Byron for a few reasons. One, we didn't really feel like we connected as much as we probably wanted to in the local community in South Gippsland. We were great friends almost with Sarah's patients, but that patient health professional dynamic is a tricky one on a social level. We knew, just having been in Byron many times before, that we're probably just going to blend with the crowd more in Byron. There's a lot of great food up here. There is a great health consciousness. But it was also that there was we definitely weren't judged in South Gippsland, but we knew that we could come up here and not have to put on a front. And again, not that we were putting on a front in South Gippsland, but we just felt like it was a really easy lifestyle up here. Another big thing was we wanted the kids to go to a Steiner school. There's a couple up here. And so that made it easy as well. Obviously, the beaches, the weather, that's a really big thing. Where we lived in Inverloch in South Gippsland, you've got beautiful beaches, but it's always cold.
Yeah.
The water's freezing. So you wanted to go for a swim, but then you kind of chicken out.
And then on the days where you could, where it was stinking hot, the sand is like so hot. I actually burnt the soles of my feet at Inverloch on the beach. The sand is just so hot. You don't want to sit out in the, It's like a beach that's kind of useless.
100%. So, you know, look, you and I have spoken many times before that there are a lot of things that aren't on the brochure up here that you experience when you start living up here. We won't talk about the roads and a few other things, but look, on so many levels, it's been the best decision that we've ever made, relocating. I say to people, better than any business decision, better than any decision. It's just got so many positive impacts. Yeah, so that was our big life decision, which I know many people have made.
I have a question for you. When did your business land? Like when did that happen?
That was up here because good question. So it was I'm a bit of an urgency addict, so I need a deadline. So essentially, what happened was I consulted to the chiropractic group that bought our practice, but then that consultancy ended and we pretty much, I'm very happy to talk figures here because so many people are so weirded out. I just like talking about it to weird people out. So we
are. Oh, that's why we get along so well, Marcus.
Yeah, totally. Kind of like making people uncomfortable. So I was just, so we came up here with 20 grand cash in the bank as a slush fund for not worrying about money when we came up here, because whenever you relocate, it's just like when you travel, you always spend more on things than you do when you're at home. When you live somewhere, you know what's expensive and where not to shop and where to shop. When you're traveling as a tourist, you just spend more money because you maybe don't have kitchen gear or any number of things. Anyway, so moving up here, it's like, well, you don't know where to shop. You don't know where to buy. You want to trial everything. So I was determined to come up here with 20 grand just so we didn't have to think about stuff. But naturally, after a while, that money starts to be spent. And this consultancy had ended. And I think at the time, from memory, we had about 6 weeks of money, so to speak. If nothing happened, we had about 6 weeks of cash just sitting in the bank. And I'm pretty budgeted, so I kind of know exactly how much we spend each week. And so maybe like we pretty much live off about 2 grand a week at PSHQ. So we probably had about 12 grand sitting in the bank. And I was like, all right, now is a wonderful time to put all of my thoughts, insights, IP into the online program that I know is just sitting there. And so I did, I bought, as soon as we sold our practice, I bought Brendan Burchard's Experts Academy program. Not sure if you're familiar with it. It's a
$2,000.
Yeah. So this is back in 2013. I would have bought the program, and then a year later, I would have consumed it voraciously because I had a deadline to make my program. But I tell the people that are interested in business, because it's just a story that I think is, or provided me with confidence. I did that $2,000 program. I did all of the content. I created it, essentially followed all of his instructions. I sold a program that I had not created. I had somewhat of an email list, but not a big one. But I essentially did a three-part video series talking about this exceptional life blueprint that I had developed the framework for, and it had just been bubbling away in my mind. And I told everyone on the videos, look, here's the Exceptional Life Blueprint online program. I have not made it, but because I haven't made it, I'm going to sell it to you in advance at a cheaper price. I sold it for $697. And I'd already been running the Wellness Couch podcast network for probably a year. And so I'd had relationships with people like Joe Witten, who's Quirky Cooking's founder. She's got a big social media presence. Cindy O'Meara, big social media presence. I just spoke to these people and said, look, I've just released this program. Would you be happy to share it? And as an affiliate, because I definitely don't like asking for favors. I'm not very good at asking for favors. So they were very happy to share it as a favor, but I did it as an affiliate. And that program, that launch was worth about, it did $40,000 in about a week.
That's amazing.
Which was great, because I think I had to pay out about 12 grand in affiliate sales, but that was so worth it, because I wouldn't have done it otherwise. But for me, it wasn't about the money, because again, if you crunch down, you know, family man numbers, like it was about 28 grand, you know, it was about 14 weeks essentially.
Bought you that time.
In terms of family time. Yeah, so then I had to go and make the program and all, and I'd given them a deadline on it will be delivered to you by, I think I did that first sale in September, and I'm pretty sure I told them I'll have it to you by the end of November. So I had a deadline to work towards, which was really good. But more than anything, it gave me the confidence that people wanted what I was sharing, because my message is very non-niche. It's not like business or health or wealth or relationships. It's all of them combined, because my whole view is if you master your business but you suck at your relationships, or if you go vegan but you hate your job, or you don't exercise, if you put great fuel in the car but you don't use the car, there are major consequences. And so I shared a non-niche message, which some people said was stupid, but I felt vindicated in that people bought the program, they loved the program, their life had massive changes. Whether it was, you know, one lady got rid of $40,000 in bad debt, which blew my mind, because I don't consider my stuff. I mean, I've got financial modules in there, but I don't focus on that. Someone else, or it sounds kind of weird, Carly, but again, we're into weirding people out. I've helped two women get out of a really nasty marriage just through the blueprint and the suppose the stuff that's in there, and then, you know, multiple people in career stuff and the rest. But a lot of it's either career, love and relationships, or productivity, and I love all that stuff, because that's really burns in my heart and soul. But I feel like that burns in a lot of people's heart and soul, and so I don't want a niche. I don't want to do just one thing. I think that would bore me, as I reckon it would bore you, just doing one thing all the time. So you know, so that's kind of been where I've come from ever since 2014, I reckon.
And so what's the evolution from that point? Because I know you do incredible events and take people overseas and all kinds of crazy
shit. The evolution from that point is I've become, I don't want to say anti-online marketing, but I love digital.
You can say anti-online marketing.
But I'm just so sick of I'm not sick of my online program, but I'm sick of the work that it takes to do it. It's so much work. People talk about this laptop lifestyle, and, you know, you and I talk about this. We have the laptop lifestyle, but there's so much work to do. You can delegate all you like, but you can't delegate your voice. You can't delegate your message. You can't delegate being you.
And laptop lifestyle, like, it's no life if you're stuck to your laptop. It doesn't matter whether you're at the beach having a fucking cocktail. If you're not enjoying the view for 5 seconds and you're stuck to that laptop, it's hardly it's hardly a freedom-based lifestyle just because you're working wherever. You're still working.
Yeah, 100%. So the evolution came through the fact I just got sick of online. I needed more offline. And so for me, offline is just what the Merrymakers, well, I first heard them call it IRL, in real life, experiences. I love live events, and I kind of got sick of essentially selling my online program. Like, I still do it. I'm happy for people to do it because I know it makes a change, but I just decided I had to spend more time on live events and real, just real stuff. So as you said, I do many events. I run wellness summits with the Wellness Couch and the Wellness Base Camp. You and I are running an event with Bronnie Ware and Shara Carruthers in Byron in March. I'm running a longevity experience over in a Greek island called Ikaria, where it's known as the island where people forget to die. Because they just don't die, they don't have heart disease, cancer, dementia. It's just, you know, they drink coffee, wine, and chocolate. I thrive on real world, real life experiences. And, you know, right now we're both sitting in an office living our laptop lifestyle, and I love this. But if I was doing this 8 hours a day, all day, like in the nicest possible way, shoot me now. It's not my cup of tea. For some people it is. But, you know, this morning I've spent 2 hours at a cafe having great coffee. I love that because that for me is more in real life. Even if I'm sitting on my laptop, which I was, I'm still amongst the community, amongst the people. And
it's definitely like quality of life over quantity of stuff, whether that is even just money or work or whatever. Like, I want quality time with the people that I love. I want to spend, you know, quality time in quality places.
I'm with you 100%. And, you know, a few kind of hacks or rules or whatever it is. I can't stand that word hacks. But, you know, I don't have a TV in the house, so that doesn't get a run at night. I don't get on my laptop at night because I'm on it already so much in the day. So if I'm reading a book, which I love to do, I read a real book because ebook just doesn't do it for me. And I make sure I spend time with my wife, Sarah, every night. Just the simplicity of sitting on the couch, cup of tea, piece of chocolate. It's just like, that's bee's knees because, again, it's just real life stuff, and I thrive on that. I'd go nutso if I was on my laptop all day living the laptop lifestyle.
Totally. What's next? What have you got? You know, where are you heading?
In that kind of whole awakening of less online marketing stuff, I then just decided to start connecting with more businesses because I realized that my tribe, many of them are going to work. Like my tribe is really working mothers that they really feel like they're actually doing an incredible job at raising a family and working and all the rest of it, but they actually feel like they're doing a terrible job. And so I've almost come with that just male brashness, really, just to say you are remarkable. And you and I talk about this. You know, like you don't have to be Insta famous. You don't have to have $1 million in the bank. You don't have to be a stay-at-home mum. Like you're incredible. You're exceptional just for being born. And having that foundational belief will then have a ripple effect on all the decisions that you make in your life. But so many people are doing incredible things, but they feel like a failure. You know, they could be, raising wonderful children, doing great things with their work, seeing their friends, eating great food, but they still feel average. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, so I now do a lot more work in the corporate space. I did some great work with the National Australia Bank last year with people that, again, doing, you know, big working hours, balancing work and family and all the rest of it. But these are like real life events, you know, they're not webinars and online programs, which again are all great. Don't get me wrong, everyone. I'm not anti them. I'm just not into doing them a lot myself at the moment because I want to connect with people in real life. And so outside of events, it's more corporate events. And I still love podcasting because I love learning about new people, doing interviews, tracking people down. That journalistic, that hunt for the story is always there. You know, interviewed a 77-year-old ballerina the other day and Australia's oldest man, Dexter Kruger. You know, hunting those people down and interviewing them, I love. For me, it's more just balancing family life with also still maintaining that thirst for travel and being on the road and doing events because I do love all of that. I love traveling and connecting with people.
Time to kick up your feet and relax. It's On the Couch.
Biggest fear?
Biggest fear is, and I don't want to sound cliche, not fulfilling my potential. Now, my biggest fear would be settling for I know you and I have slightly different definitions on the word mediocrity, but we both use it a lot. So in my definition, settling for mediocrity, like just settling for average again, because you and I have slightly different definitions. My definition is just settling for something which I know is not fulfilling to me when I know that I truly want something more. And I think that I grew up, I saw an average marriage in the nicest possible way. My mum and dad, it's the best thing they ever did splitting up. If they had stayed together, they would have lived the example of an average marriage. And that's just the last thing that I want for myself, my wife, and my children. Work, you know, I just think it's a waste of a life to go to a job you don't like. Because if you go to a job that you don't like, you're more likely to not bring the best version of you to work. You can go to a job that you don't like but still be an incredible person in that job, but that requires some awareness. The standard of treating your family like they're getting in your way, whereas your family are your greatest teachers and they're wanting you to express the best version of yourself, which again, that requires some awareness. Doing the opposite of anything exceptional for me is like my worst nightmare. But at the same time, the whole thing is to recognize that just being alive is exceptional. And having that awareness that, again, you don't have to be a millionaire with 500,000 people on Instagram or Twitter. Just being a great person is exceptional in itself. And that's probably, if I wasn't, that would be realizing my greatest fear. If I was a prick, that would be just my worst nightmare.
Yeah. Lucky you're not. And biggest struggle, what are you struggling with at the moment?
Well, I'm constantly running away from the life that my dad lived. So my dad had to reverse out of the driveway when I was 10, never to sleep under the roof of the home that he built. That was his pride, was his joy, was his everything. And, you know, my dad unfortunately made the mistake in life that going to work was, you know, he thought that going to work was the family life. He thought that if he went to work, that made him a great husband and it made him a great dad. And unfortunately, the provider, he paid the ultimate price. So my constant challenge is, how do I be a dad that has quality time with my kids and quantity time, and has quality time with my wife, grows a business, and fills all of the cups? My challenge is everyone else's challenge. Like, how do you be exceptional at all 8 key areas of life? But my view is that if you don't have a standard for it, then you kind of give up. And if I gave up on any of those areas of life, I know just by observing, interviewing, and researching hundreds, if not thousands, of human beings that have settled for mediocrity in an area of their life, the consequences are terrible. You know, if you spend more than you earn for your life, you end up at one of those, and you don't look after yourself, you end up in one of those nursing homes where 75% of your pension is spent on your accommodation, and you're pissing your pants all day, being fed like feral food, and your children don't want to come and visit you because the place stinks like wee. Like,
totally.
So, you know what I mean? So then you've got to look after your money. And you've got to look after your health. But then you've kind of got to – so, anyway, I'll bang on. I'll stop in the
– you got to look after
your health. We're not at an event, are we? I just tweet every freaking moment like an event these days.
Come to Byron and you'll hear the rest of the story.
Come to one day in Byron, babe.
You know, we all have like that evil bitch in our heads that tends to tell us a bunch of untruths about ourselves. What do you hear? What is the negative Nancy or Neil in your case?
Negative Neil. Neil's my dad's middle name. Now, just for all those people think that I'm, you know, bashing my dad, I'm not. My dad is my best mate. I love him to pieces, but he's also been my greatest teacher because he's taught me more about
parents aren't what not faultless, to have. Right? Like, I think sometimes there's so much pressure on us to be faultless parents too, and it doesn't matter how great we are. The kids are going to come and see things from where they need to and what they have too. So, it's not about, beating up your parents, but they do have such a big impact in our lives. So, of course, I love my mum too and I love my dad, but, man, have they fucked me up in some ways.
Well, that's the thing. They haven't. Did you say have they fucked you up?
Yeah.
See, that's where I would beg to differ. They haven't.
No.
They've just they've laid a challenge to you that is really difficult in some areas of life. But we have to thank them for like screwing it up. Like,
totally.
I had this one liner. It's like, as much as we don't want to admit it, sometimes we get into our adult life and go, my parents were cockheads. But my parents weren't, don't get me wrong. But some people lived some people had very challenging childhoods. They may have been physically abused, mentally abused.
Totally.
All types of things. So your parents may have been cockheads, but at some point in your life, you want to get to a point where you thank your parents for being your parents, where you're so grateful that you had that life. Because you look at some of the oldest people ever to live wonderful lives, they went through the Holocaust. You know, the oldest man, Israel Crystal, he was the world's oldest man until his death, just shy of his 114th birthday. He went through the Holocaust, lost his wife and kids in the Holocaust, forgave Hitler, lived a great life, in his own words. Like, so we've got to be really mindful of how much are we holding on to our family upbringing, because that resentment lives in people's bodies and it kills them. And the amount of people that I work with that eat the perfect diet and they meditate and they're mindful and they're writing the gratitude journal, but they hate their mum and they hate their daughter, they won't forgive their husband or their kids did this. And it's like, well, you know what? Like, your diet's not going to fix any of that.
Yeah.
You know, you can go gluten-free or you can forgive your parents. Like,
I'll forgive my parents and eat the sourdough, thanks. Yeah, I don't even notice that I don't have gluten. Anyway.
Sorry,
that was a bit of a side tangent. So what does the evil bitch in your head say?
Yes. So is it more like what's my, like, limited belief or what is it?
Yeah, what do you hear when you're extending yourself? What do you hear?
Oh, well, so I feel like, and again, it's kind of a mantra that I feel has some positive consequences, but I'm sure it has some negative ones. And it's more like there's plenty of time for me to make my millions, like, financially. Yeah. So, you know, I say to people, and I genuinely believe it, like, I'm a millionaire in every area of my life except my business. But then at the same time, I know that I would much rather be a millionaire in my family life and my health and my life purpose. And I've got, look, in 10 years' time, my kids aren't going to want to spend much time with me. So do I grow a great business slowly, or do I do what my dad did and, like, go and work 70, 80-hour weeks and grow my business really quickly and get on the road and travel and do more events and corporate gigs and all the rest of it, but possibly sacrifice my family as well?
Yeah. It's like, so, life is long, but it's also very short.
Yeah, so, yeah. You know, so I had this constant, you know, this entrepreneurial seizure of, I'll go and take over the world. But then it's like, oh, hold on a minute. Like, three kids.
What is that going to cost me?
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know if it's limiting, but sometimes it feels limiting. But then other times I'm so grateful for it as well. And it's more of a constant battle between embracing the phase of life that I'm in, knowing that it's a chapter that will end and there'll be a new chapter, versus, you know, seizing opportunities that come up. You know, like that NAB gig, you know, it's like NAB's like one of the biggest employers in the country. So I'm like, oh, I could go and travel the country speaking to NAB and doing this and doing that. It's like, oh, yeah, but hold on. Like, what will that cost you? So it's a fine line. And so I'm constantly on the lookout for mentors that, you know, they thrive in their business and their family. And that's not as easy to find as it sounds. Like, you'd like to think that it does, that it, and I know it's there. Don't get me wrong. I know there's plenty of people doing it well. But that's definitely kind of my challenge at this phase of my life, I would say.
And what does failure mean to you?
Look, if I was still working in TV and I was there for the paycheck and I had a mortgage in a house that I didn't love, living in a suburb that I didn't really embrace, and I didn't really know my local barista or my next-door neighbours or, you know, the people down at the local gym, but I kind of knew Channel 7, 9 and 10 and the TV Guide inside out probably better than my kids. That's probably my definition of failure.
Yeah. That's a good one.
I knew the ingredients and the distribution address of my local beer better than, you know, when my kids went to school.
Yeah, that would be a sad existence.
Yeah.
And success, on the flip side of that, success, what does that look and feel like for you?
Well, it's 8 sentences. If you do what you love and love what you do, if movement is a lifestyle choice rather than a chore, if socializing is energizing, if you live by the 80-20 rule of nutrition and you eat with people that you love, it's not what you eat but who you eat it with, if your family are your greatest teachers and you love them unconditionally, if you're constantly learning the things that you're passionate about rather than what you think you should learn, if you're spending less than you earn and investing the difference, and if you see the blessing in all life's events rather than just in the things that you agree with, then I think that's success. And that's essentially what I am to live by on a daily basis. And even though that seems like a hard path for many, that's the path that I am committed to living in my life. And I don't expect everyone to love it or agree with it, but that's my definition of success.
I just love that you know that so fucking well.
Well, it's like for me, business is the greatest source of accountability. Like, because otherwise, I'm a terrible liar. Yeah. You've seen me fidget if I try and like lie my way through anything. So if I can't be congruent in my business, then I can't be congruent in my life for me. And because I can't, like, just, you know, long story short, when I was running this longevity experience in Ikaria in 2016, I was at this festival where they all drink wine and dance, and many Ikarians smoke. I haven't had a cigarette in years. 2006 was my last cigarette. And it was the very last day of the retreat, and, you know, I'd had some wine, and they put water in their wine over there, and they always drink, and they always eat whilst they're drinking so they can drink more, and they put water in their wine so they can drink more, and they dance so they can drink more, and they talk to each other so they can drink more, and they drink goat broth before the festival so they can drink more, which means that the festival can go for literally 10 to 12 hours. No joke. And I'm like halfway through this, and I've had a fair bit of wine, and I'm so happy with the world and life and the experience. The whole retreat's been awesome. And I thought, oh, I might just have a cigarette. Like, look at them. They're just so happy. I haven't had a cigarette in years, 10 years. Like, one cigarette. And I was like, yeah, I think I'm going to do it. And then I literally went to ask Marina for a cigarette, and she said, Marcus, don't do it. Don't do it. And I probably had six glasses of this wine, which they drink out of like latte glasses, you know, like the Europeans do. Yeah. They're not in light. They're like little latte glasses. And she said, what will you tell your kids? And I said, bang on, what would I tell my kids? Like, would I come home and I go, oh, kids, Dad had a cigarette, but he hasn't had one in 10 years, so it was kind of okay. And I was like, I couldn't do it. Like, yeah. That would just it'd be incongruent.
Yeah.
And I was like, bang on, I'm not having one. Even though I love the idea of it, I'm not doing it. And so congruence and accountability is just everything. And thankfully I had Marina there to say, don't do it. She was the one with the cigarettes. She was a smoker. And so I hope that answers your question.
Yes. It totally does. Congruence. It's so, so important. It's one of my highest values too.
And not telling the truth, like not saying anything is a lie in itself. So if I never tell my kids that story.
Omission. Yeah.
When people go, well, you didn't tell me. That doesn't mean that you didn't tell the truth. You lied. Like leaving news out of the story is a lie. And, you know, I told my mum and I have dinner party conversations about this till we're black and blue in the face. But, you know, my mum will say on a need-to-know basis, people don't need to know. But on a need-to-know basis, if people don't know, they still don't have the whole truth. That's and right. So
they can't form an educated opinion or even a picture on something if you're hiding the sky from the picture. You know, if you're hiding a major part of the picture, how can anyone see the picture?
And you totally. And I say this all the time. People only want to tell you the good news.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, don't give me the good news. Like, tell me that you're tired. Tell me that you can't stand the world right now. Yeah. Tell me that your kids are driving you mental. Tell me that your business is going through challenge. Tell me that your best friend just deceived you. Tell me that you think your husband might be cheating on you. Tell me that you think that your dad, you know, did this or did that. Like, tell me that you, you know, think you don't believe in the goodness of humanity anymore. Like, whatever it is. Like,
and on that flip side of that, don't apologize when you're also sharing good things. Like, I find so many people who go, oh, sorry for bragging, but my kid, blah, 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 blah. Or sorry for bragging, but, you know, it's like, no, just own that too. Like, own all of it.
Yeah.
But share all of it, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm with you.
Last question is freedom. What does freedom mean to you?
It's not the laptop lifestyle stuff. That's definitely not it. I think freedom for me comes more between the ears. I think when you can be courageous enough to make the decisions that give you, like, that make you sweat, then I think you've achieved freedom because you're not constrained by the limits of mediocrity, which is really like the limits of what other people say you can and can't do. So some people would define what I've just said as reckless, and to those people they'd be true, they'd be correct. Whereas for me, freedom is living in that tricky space of uncertainty where you're scared, but it's kind of thrilling.
Liberating, exhilarating. Yeah.
Yeah. Like just recently we booked, I still sweat saying it. I booked 5 airfares for a family trip to Europe in the middle of the year, either side of this trip to Ikaria for this retreat. I'm so used to buying flights from the Gold Coast to Melbourne, Gold Coast to Sydney, Gold Coast to Adelaide, and even one trip to Europe I can deal with. But when the dollar signs are there for 5 return airfares and your third child turns 2 13 days before you fly, where that would have been a free airfare, and then you look at all of the accommodation and you start budgeting it and you realize that your accommodation budgets are 50% of what you're really going to pay, you start freaking out. But it's so exciting at the same time. Like, it's just so exciting, but it's so scary. And I think life should be scary and exciting. If it's not, like, it's boring and predictable, then I feel for that person. And I know many of them, but I feel for that. I like to live on the edge, not in a way where I'm going to kill myself. I don't, as Sarah said, she's jumped out of a plane once. She doesn't feel the need to do it again. But I think life has to be, there has to be a dance. Tony Robbins talks about the 6 human needs. We all have the need for certainty, but we also have the need for uncertainty. Now, you can get that need through watching TV and what's going to happen next on Game of Thrones and living that uncertainty, or you can do things that really scare you in an empowering way. And that's kind of where I like to live.
The plug. Instead of filling the podcast with self-promotion, we're being totally transparent. Here's the plug.
Well, I'm gonna make it our website to begin with. So priority one, if people hear this in time, is come to the most beautiful town in Australia. Come to Byron Bay for one day in Byron Bay. Our corny one line is, if you've been saying one day I'll do this, one day I'll do that, then schedule it in to be that one day in Byron Bay. Come and write the script of your life in Byron Bay with Carly, myself, Bronnie Ware, who wrote the top 5 regrets of the dying. She's going to be talking about courage. Carly's talking about choice and really choosing to be you, the one that was born, not someone else. I'll be talking about clarity and turning that overwhelm into your script. And Shara's talking about connection, how to connect to yourself, to others, to what truly is important to you. We're doing that all on one day on Saturday, March 3 at the Byron Theatre. So I would highly recommend, don't go order my stuff. Go to onedayinbyronbay.com. And then if you listen to podcasts, I do have the 100 Not Out podcast that's been going for 5+ years. And then I do run the Wellness Couch podcast network, which is at thewellnesscouch.com. So if you love your health and wellness and personal growth, head on over to thewellnesscouch.com. We've got over 20 different shows. And then you'll see all of the events that I run there. That's probably the best thing for people to do, I dare say.
The takeaway. Exercises or tips for positive change, sprinkled with salt and vinegar, wrapped in newspaper and handed over the counter from our special guest to you.
Just remember that you won the race. You know, when your mum and dad came together, no matter what lives they've lived, you won the race. Out of all of those little spermies fighting for the gold medal, you won. So that's exceptional to begin with. Winner, exactly. And the winner is you. So don't treat yourself like the person that came last. Don't put yourself last. Don't be the extra in the script, so to speak. Don't put everyone ahead of you. You must fill your tank up first. Fill your glass of water first, because no use hydrating everyone else whilst you're slowly dehydrating, giving from a dry cup that becomes bitter and twisted and resentful, and then you start getting cranky at the little things in life when everyone's telling you not to sweat the small stuff, but you've forgotten how. Fill
and then
your
you die
tank
10
up.
Years earlier. Fuck
seriously,
that.
Hating the world. Yes, pretty much, you know. So you've got it in one. So that would be my takeaway.
Thank you, Marcus.
Selfish.
You're
be
seriously
selfish.
The best.
Likewise, that's why we get on so well.
See you in March.
All right. Thanks, Carly.
Thanks for tuning into Carlosophies. If you really dug this app, I'd love for you to share it with someone who you think might also dig it. Really helps me to spread the word. And if you'd like to get to know me a little better and see some in-between app thoughts and insights and be around some super cool people, join my Facebook tribe, Show Up Speak Up. Search Show Up Speak Up in Facebook or head to carlynimmo.com/tribe. Until next time, be real, be rad. Peace out.